you know, the expectation was that they were going to look at it again and rule it the same way again.
Right.
And so the implications of that would have been, well, you know, the saying is, as goes California, so goes the nation. And when they completely reverse themselves, this is almost unheard of, where a three-judge panel of experienced, long-standing judges rule on a case one way, and then 5 months later, rule in the exact opposite way. And it's just kind of unprecedented. But that's what happened. And so now the implication is, don't mess with homeschoolers.
Welcome to the Frontline with FPM, where we talk about California politics, homeschool freedom, parental rights, and the family. I'm your host, Nathan Pierce, and thanks for joining us today. Let's jump right in and see what's going on here on the Frontline. You were talking about all the different organizations that were involved in doing these amicus briefs, and amazing that there were that many. That was pretty incredible by itself. And now, everybody knows, like you said, don't mess with the homeschoolers. It was interesting in the time we even had, you know, some government officials filing briefs on our behalf as well.
Right. Yeah, it was one of those weird things that at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor and Jerry Brown was the attorney general. So, and they both filed briefs in support of the right to homeschool. So we had HSLDA, we had Family Protection Ministries, and we had the Terminator and the Moonbeam. That's a pretty good crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty amazing. And they did reverse their decision, and that's still standing today, right? I mean, there's
Correct.
Nothing that has diminished their decision.
No, right. And you know, to be fair to the judges, the case came up in an unusual posture. It was out of a confidential juvenile court case where the juvenile court judge ruled that a family, they'd had a teenage daughter who was removed. They were homeschooling younger kids, and the children's lawyers from the kind of the public advocacy group that represented children in California didn't like that, and so they went to the Court of Appeals to say, no, these parents, not only should these parents not be allowed to homeschool, but homeschooling itself is illegal. And they based their legal argument on a long-standing legal argument that had been floating around California from, you know, kind of originated by Delane Easton, who was the superintendent of public instruction back in the 90s into the 2000s. And it just never got anywhere. My predecessor here as president, our founder, Mike Smith, who represented California for many, many years, probably wrote 1,000 letters, you know, saying, no, that legal argument is no good. But nobody knew about the case because it's a confidential juvenile court case. So the parents were represented by a court-appointed lawyer who made decent arguments on kind of general terms, but didn't know the ins and outs of California law that your organization and others had kind of sprinkled the statutes with things that if you didn't know to look for them, because homeschooling is not mentioned in the statutes, it's all under the private school provision, you wouldn't really know they were there. So when we got involved, and you helped do some legal research for us even back then in the archives, as I recall. No, you weren't. Yeah, you and Mary did the archives.
Mary and I, yeah.
So we were able to, because we had, you know, been laboring in the California world for so many years, we knew all of those things that the first round of briefing, none of them were brought to the court's attention. And so it was a really strong argument that we'd been making in other places for years, but that this court didn't have the benefit of the first round.
So given cases like that and cases like you're still working on and
Pennsylvania and everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Do you see any, you know, more significant challenges in the coming years, or do you kind of feel like things are pretty stable and we just have to put out small fires here and there?
I think that it's important for us to remain really focused and vigilant, because there are determined ideological opponents who would like to roll things back. Earlier this year, in this year's legislative season in Illinois, a determined group of folks that would like to introduce new laws. So Illinois is very much like California. It's a private school state. And they got a legislator to introduce a bill that really imposed a lot of regulations that didn't exist before. And one of the hardest, or one of the kind of probably a mistake, a tactical mistake on their part to put this in, it required for the first time a notice to be filed, and it made it a crime, a misdemeanor, to miss the deadline for turning in the notice. And it had many other features, but that one particular feature caught the attention of, many people have the notion that homeschooling is kind of a rural or a small town kind of thing, and it's mostly, you know, Christians, middle class, and white Christian middle class people. What they didn't know is that in Chicago there's a really rapidly growing black homeschooling population, and so we had become friends with Chris and Aziza Butler, he's a pastor and she's a homeschool advocate in South Chicago. And over the years, we've become acquainted with them, and they've risen in homeschool leadership along those years. And they got involved in the fight against this new statute, and they were able to bring into the conversation a whole different kind of population of homeschooling parents. And they got the attention of legislators on the other side of the aisle who saw this criminalizing something so trivial as a late deadline as a really bad idea for people they cared about in Chicago. And that turned the tide. So that's one of the things. I mean, so the threat is there are determined ideological opponents who would like to roll back homeschool freedom. There's a growing population of homeschoolers that are not, they don't fit the stereotype at all. And those two things are working kind of against each other to secure freedom. But, you know, here in Virginia where I live, that same group of opponents sought to have, they got a bill introduced that would have repealed Virginia's religious exemption statute, which has been in existence since 1976. And it was actually signed into law, it was actually introduced, by state senator named Wilder, who later went on to become the first black governor in Virginia. So the religious exemption, it didn't, its pedigree was pretty spotless, but they wanted to remove it. That's what my family did. We homeschooled here for all these years under that religious exemption statute. So the homeschoolers rallied and the bill died in committee. But we're seeing that kind of thing right now. Today, there's a bill pending in New Jersey that would require annual in-person wellness checks for homeschool kids, as well as require homeschools to follow the state standards of learning, which include education in the state's version of diversity, equity, and inclusion. So if that bill were to pass, it would essentially mean that parents who homeschooled had to teach exactly what was being taught in the public schools on all subjects, including this diversity, equity, inclusion stuff. So, you know, the bill has been introduced. It hasn't moved. New Jersey has odd year elections, so they have an election in November. We're watching it very closely to see if the bill gets taken up and starts moving in the lame duck time.
Okay. Yeah. So it seems like while you're continuing to fight all of these smaller issues, families having to submit or fight against having to submit extra paperwork or whatever it is from one state to the next, or one school official to the next, there's always that undercurrent of a potential threat, a real real threat that there would be fundamental challenges to the very existence of homeschool freedom. HSLDA also has sort of engagement with other countries outside the U.S. too, right? I mean, you've dealt with some issues around the world. What's kind of the situation there? Are there any trends as far as homeschool freedoms in other countries or challenges there?
Yeah, it's a little bit more challenging in many countries. Homeschooling is growing in a lot of countries, but slowly. And, you know, there's something, I haven't actually written about this, and I'm kind of speaking thoughts that I'd like to explore some more, but I write and talk a lot about kind of the soil of American freedom, you know, how we got to be who we are. And it just doesn't exist everywhere in the world, the soil from which we spring. And so translating homeschool freedom into cultures of other countries is a little bit more difficult. You know, the UNESCO, the United Nations ESCO, education something or other, just came out with a report viewing homeschooling through a human rights lens, and that sounds really nice, but the international human rights lens isn't the same thing as the kind of natural law rights that is the soil of American freedom. And so while it's interesting that the UN has come out with a paper specifically devoted to international homeschooling and what that means, that human rights lens leads to a different place. And the natural law rights soil of America would say that, you know, government should be limited and should protect natural rights. And one of those natural rights is the right of parents to educate and raise their children in their own faith and according to their own conscience, where the human rights lens begins kind of more with the proposition that, you know, children kind of belong to the state and the state should, you know, tolerate this or tolerate that under certain circumstances. That's something that we're actually working on addressing in a longer form paper coming out soon.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to seeing that. That sounds interesting. I think that the concept of family being the core a core building block of our society is something that is getting challenged more and more. Certainly the definition of family is being challenged and continuing to be attacked, but just the ability of a family, parents to make decisions for their kids is under attack and has been. I feel like that concept comes out. You mentioned a little while ago the idea of religious freedom being the basis for some of these cases that you've won on. There's a significant tie in there, right?
Yes.
From a federal constitutional basis too, right? I mean, it's not just like individual state principles.
Yes. So I mentioned the Pierce v. Society of Sisters case. So the Society of Sisters was a Catholic school. Oregon had banned private education, and the Supreme Court in 1925 did not rule on religious freedom grounds, but on kind of more of a parental rights grounds. 1925, they didn't talk about things quite the same way as we might talk about it today.
Okay.
Now, fast forward to 2025, in a case arising out of Maryland, the Supreme Court, the case is called Mahmoud v. Taylor, where a school district in Maryland was teaching young children things that were kind of many religious parents from Muslim, Jewish, and Christian families objected to. And for a while, parents could opt out of those classes. And then the school district reversed that policy and said, no, not only can you not opt out, but we're not going to tell you when we do it. So, you know, you have to know when to hold your kids back from school. And that case went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court held on religious freedom grounds that even parents in public schools have a religious freedom right to withhold their kids from things that they would feel would threaten their children's religious formation. The case is great, but it's like a half a step more is what needed to happen, because I don't think a parent has to have a religious basis for objecting to something. That all parents have that, and that goes kind of back to the natural rights, natural law formulations, that I don't have to believe that there's a God, but we as Christians believe that we owe a duty to God to raise our children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, which in my view means that all parents have that duty, whether they agree with it or not. So if I have the right, they should have the right too.
Yeah, and that I think that's important for us to acknowledge, looking at, like you said, the case in 2008, where we banded together with a range of different groups of people, and we have to be able to stand up for one another and band together like that. And I think that's been important here in California and across the country.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. Is there anything else that you want to close with? I know that I always encourage people to join HSLDA to reach out when they have legal issues related to homeschooling. But I think there's a huge benefit to the existence of HSLDA, whether you're a homeschooling parent or not. Anything else you'd like to close with?
Yeah, I'll just expand on what you said. We are member supported and donation supported. And, you know, as a member, if you come into legal trouble with respect to your homeschooling, you know, you have a lawyer at your, you know, a phone call 24/7. But when we do things for one family, we like to view it as we're doing it for all the other families. So the 2008 California case, you know, we had done all these little cases, all unremarkable, you know, nobody knew about them much. And there were, I did like maybe half a dozen or more cases on a very little issue, where I learned the legal arguments that we ended up using to save the freedom to homeschool for everybody in California. So when you're a member of HSLDA, a supporter of us, there are personal benefits, but it's really to help the cause for everybody else. So we work on behalf of one family so that all families can be free.
Yeah, and thank you for doing that, and for keeping things going. Thanks for saying yes to being invited to be the president, and I'm glad you're there, and glad HSLDA is still strong and going, and look forward to many, many more years of freedom.
Well, let me just give a pitch for Family Protection Ministries also. I've known Nathan now since 2008, and Jim Davis and Roy Hansen before that. Family Protection Ministries does a lot of behind-the-scenes work that you may not know about, but it's vital, it's important, and you should support them as much as you can, because it's the kind of dedicated long-term work that keeps homeschooling free in California.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you so much, and thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's one of the differences that classical education or classical Christian education is. We put God at the center of education instead of the student. So, you know, we're not a student-centric curriculum. We're a God-centric curriculum. And we want to help kids to, you know, look up into the sky and think about their creator and not looking down so much on his creation. And so that's what we're trying to do.
Tune in next time for this conversation with the CEO of Classical Conversations, Robert Portens. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Frontline with FPM. For more information about the topics we discuss here, check out Family Protection Ministries at fpmca.org and subscribe to our channel.